through partnership development, capacity building, and innovative strategies, the Detroit Community Academic Urban Research Center, or the Detroit URC, as we call it, where we live. Our first presenter will be Barbara Israel. Needs no introduction, I'm sure, to this audience. Professor, Department of Health Behavior and Health Education at our School of Public Health at the University of Michigan. And she has extensive experience conducting community-based participatory research in collaboration with partners in diverse communities. And since 1995, she has, it's over 20 years. About 20 years. She has worked together with academic and community partners to establish and maintain the Detroit Community Academic Urban Research Center and affiliated partnerships, and she's been involved in a number of projects aimed at increasing knowledge and addressing factors associated with health equities in Detroit. And I have to say, as a personal note, that for me and a multitude of others, she is the quintessential model of leadership in forming community academic partnerships and working with them. She is co-presenting with another public health leader that I've admired over many years, Kimberly Dawn Wisdom, who is the Senior Vice President of Community Health and Equity and Chief Wellness and Diversity Officer at Henry Ford Health System. She's a board-certified emergency medical physician, the chair of the Gail and Lois Warden Endowment on Multicultural Health, and Michigan's and the nation's first state-level Surgeon General. In 2012, she was appointed by President Obama to serve on the Advisory Group on Prevention, Health Promotion, and Integrative and Public Health. And since 1987, she's been on the faculty of University of Michigan Medical School's Department of Medical Education and adjunct professor in the University of Michigan School of Public Health. Pleased to turn the chair over to Barbara and Kimberly Dawn.
Thank you, Toby. Thanks so much, Toby, for those kind words. I'm delighted to be here. It's great to see familiar faces and new faces. I'm also delighted to be co-presenting with my friend and colleague and Detroit community partner, base partner, Kimberly Dawn. Want to acknowledge our other co-authors who are listed here, as well as our funding sources. I want to specifically acknowledge Julia Weinert, who's the center manager and is located right here. Wave your hand, Julia, who is very instrumental in all of this work, as well as in putting this presentation together. And I'll do a shout-out to Chris Coombe as well. We'll be talking some about the work that Chris has been doing, and a number of other people in the room. So thanks for that. We have nothing to disclose. That's a quick slide. All right. So let me just give a little background about the Detroit Urban Research Center and about Detroit. Again, I think as many people know, Detroit experiences a disproportionate social and physical stressors that contribute to health inequities that exist in the city. And also, there's limited access. Let's see if I can get rid of this little thing. There we go. Sorry. There's limited access to resources that contribute to positive health outcomes. At the same time, there's a number of strengths and resources that exist within the city, which the groups and organizations and individuals with which we work. But all of that leads to a critical need for multi-directional relationships between academic researchers and community entities, as well as enhanced capacity for all parties to achieve equitable partnerships, and sustainable infrastructure that transform these relationships. I want to say here, I was so delighted to hear, and I mean, this is such a nice compliment, and Angel and I go way back, and it's really nice to be co-presenting on the same panel with her, as well as Alex and Christine and others. Sorry if I don't get all the names. Because I think there's just so much synergy in the work that we've been doing over the years and how we've learned from each other and built on the work that each other is doing. So hopefully you'll see a lot of parallels between our presentation and the one you just heard. The Detroit Community Academic Urban Research Center, as Toby said, was established in 1995 by the Centers for Disease Control. At the time, there were three URCs, Detroit, New York, Angel, and Seattle. The Detroit URC aims to improve health and well-being of Detroit residents and contribute to the elimination of health inequities by a number of different ways. First, through enhancing understanding of the relationship between social and physical determinants of health, so a lot of emphasis on trying to understand, do research to understand those determinants, but also enhancing capacity of community and academic entities to engage in community-based participatory research, CBPR, or I'll be here all day. one of the things about this that's really important is that, yes, we spend a lot of time trying to enhance community capacity, but also enhance academic researchers' capacity to do this kind of work, that it's really important to do both and needed. And then translating knowledge into public health interventions and programs and policies that build upon community resources and strengths. So this is a slide of our partners, the logos. We used to have an org chart. This is a lot more fun. Henry Ford Health System has been a longstanding partner since the beginning. We have 8 community-based organizations. We started off several units at the University of Michigan. We started off in 2 neighborhoods in the city of Detroit. We expanded into a third now, and then into 7, and now we're doing work citywide. For people who don't know, the city of Detroit as a whole is about 83% African-American, 7% Latino, and the remaining is predominantly white, as well as some Arab, Somalia, and Hmong populations. The Detroit URC is guided by a board, and the board is made up of representatives of each of these partner organizations. The board meets monthly. The board oversees everything, all the major decisions, and the work that we do. So we've been, more recently, been really trying to expand. As part of our work, we've had over 30 projects funded. We've had over 10 affiliated partnerships established, looking at a number of different issues. Not going to go into those today. But rather, what we've been more recently trying to do is recognizing, you know, the need is great, the resources, the interest is tremendous. How do we expand and do more collaborative research partnerships? That all of us who've been doing this work for a number of years have pretty full plates. How do we bring in additional researchers, additional community-based organizations? And that's what our focus is on today. And we are trying to do that through 4 strategies. First is building capacity of community entities and academic researchers to engage as equitable partners, actively facilitate new collaborative research relationships, provide opportunities to establish new collaborative research partnerships. We're going to elaborate on each of these and show you how we've tried to do that, and expand and maintain the URC's communications infrastructure. The first one, building capacity. We've conducted workshops, presentations on CBPR both in Detroit as well as locally, nationally, and internationally. We probably, amongst all of us involved, and we always co-present with a community partner, Detroit-based partner, do up to 20 of these kinds of workshops and trainings around the country and the world every year, plus a lot of the work that we do locally. We have a week-long short course on CBPR, and since 2011 we've been able to get scholarships for Detroit-based community partners to come and attend that week-long workshop without having to pay tuition, and that's been really exciting. And then we've been providing mentoring from community academic partners for both academic researchers and community entities, similar to, I think, to what Angel was talking about in terms of coaching. Again, have been doing a lot of that work. Just want to say a little bit about the work we've been doing with training community-based organizations around, and this came from our community-based organization partners. They said, you know, people come to us all the time and access to the data, access to your population. And our partners say, no, you're not getting access to our population. That's not what we're about. So they've begun to realize, and you know, early on realized, that they need to figure out and that they need to help work with other community-based organizations about what do you do when a researcher knocks on your door or sends you an email and says, you know, get your people to fill out this survey, and no, we're not going to do it in Spanish, even though it's in the Latino community. This happened like 6 months ago. I mean, so this is real. So we, with our community partners, developed a curriculum for training of community-based organizations about collaborative research. We've conducted a number of workshops just for CBOs. This does not involve academic researchers, about understanding the benefits and the challenges of collaborative research. Next 2 slides are just some examples of what we do in that training. We try to make it very interactive. It's a half-day training. One of the things we do early on is we raise this question, so why should your organization be involved in research? And we do a brainstorming and discussion and interactive. People learn from each other why other people are thinking this is important, and then build off that on the rest of the workshop. And then we talk about community rights in research. Again, I'm not going to go through these here, but this is an example of a slide and very interactive, but talking about shared power and decision making, talking about mutual respect, co-learning, beneficial to the community, and so forth. And so I'm going to turn it over to Kimberly Dahl.
Okay, great. I'm also very delighted to be here today, and it truly is an honor to have the opportunity to present with Barbara about what we feel is very important. It's kind of interesting as a major healthcare system in Detroit to be actively embracing the CBPR principles, and it's a journey, but yet having the guidance of the work that's been done by Barbara and many of you in this room has been really tremendous. So I'm going to share a little bit of time talking about the Community Academic Research Network, or what we call the CAR Network, and actually much of the work, as we've learned from been informed by Barbara's work, one approach and one way that we think in terms of the community is that the community often says, there's a quote that says, if you are here to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you are here because your liberation is bound up in mine, then let us begin. That's an Aboriginal proverb. And so that's the approach that we take, that we really need to work very closely with the community, and see, certainly the URC does embrace that principle. So one of the major undertakings is creating opportunities for new collaboration and providing those linkages between the academic researchers and, of course, the members of the community-based entities to pursue new collaborations and research. And actually, this effort is very much a virtual entity and very dynamic and very multi-directional. Creating profiles and a searchable member database on the website. So each organization, the academic organizations, they have their mission, vision, activities, research efforts are on the website and are actually able to be searched. Providing interviews with community-based network members to determine research needs. So up to 20 interviews have been conducted with our community-based partners in order to determine what their research needs are. And I'll, on the next slide, share some of those efforts. Now, while this may look fairly daunting, overwhelming at initial glance, there are certain more major themes that have percolated out of these interviews, and those are the top five categories represented here are mental health, data needs, education, health care, and health inequities. However, many of these, and it really just shows a diversity of the types of interests that the community-based academic partners research network has, which is really great. It gives great opportunity to address needs in a very broad way. And from a health system standpoint, it also helps guide us in terms of our community health needs assessment work. We know what the needs are based on what we hear from these community members and academic researchers. But there are also subcategories, and as you'll see, for instance, environmental health includes air quality and health, contaminated land, environmental health in general, as well as lead prevention and control. And the chronic disease effort can be categorized into asthma, diabetes, heart disease, as well as obesity. So the CAR network also includes about 137 community and academic members that are interested in, of course, doing research, and that those numbers are growing. And there are the searchable database is just invaluable, that catalogs and disseminates research topics identified by the leaders of community-based organizations and the academic researchers participating in this CAR network. Now, you can't have a network without having some networking, right? So you have to have that social component that the team is very interested in, and Julia does a lot of work to make sure that networking, that social aspect occurs. So the network social brings together members of the CARD network, and we've actually had two meetings over the last 2 years of these social events. And one is more the informal, where when you arrive at the social gathering, you pick up the ribbon similarly to what you do here in at a meeting. You pick up the ribbons and you put them on your badge of ribbons that represent your area of interest. So there's the informal portion where you go around and network and people can see what you're interested in. And then we have a more formal part, which we call our speed dating, where you actually, we spend, there are various areas designated with various topics, and you go sit at those various tables for about 15 minutes with people that are like-minded and doing similar research. And then you can move, after 15 minutes or so, you move to the next table. So we have a lot of fun, and a lot of great interest is spurred in that process. Over the last 2 years, we have about 40 to 50 guests that come to this event, and they're from all over. Some people travel well over an hour, hour and a half to come to this networking social event. And actually, the quote from one of our members that is actually part of our board, too, she said, "This event has been a wonderful opportunity to meet and create relationships with researchers who are interested in the same issues that I am working on to address in Southwest Detroit, her particular area of interest. I am currently working on 3 new projects with researchers who I met at last year's event." So certainly this is a catalyst type of event in spurring on new research and new opportunities. Also, there's been a great small planning grant program that supports establishment of new community academic partnerships and collaborative health research efforts. The projects meet the following criteria. They're responsive to community and academic needs. Of course, that need piece is very important, to be responsive to what the community needs. Community and academic partners are actively involved. Collaborative research principles apply, and the potential for future collaborations. So really, one of the wonderful quotes that came from one of the small planning grant recipients is, what this grant really facilitated was the development of the partnership, specifically the relationship building. It helped us set the groundwork where we were able to do a first research study that was funded through other sources. So really, again, that catalytic activity that really helps to spur new interest, new work, and but yet has a tremendous support of the network behind them in order to ensure their success. The small grant planning application process, there have been 13 projects have been funded since 2010 with an average award of about $3,500. So these aren't huge grants, so they're very, very much that seed money to help get them going and solidify that collaboration. And all grantees reported continuing collaboration upon completion of the funding period. So that's what's so beautiful, I think, about this approach. And grantees have explored future collaborative efforts, and this was done through a very nice evaluation process to find out, you know, what has occurred with these grantees. Plan to submit or have submitted new grant proposals, presented research findings nationally and regionally at conferences, meetings, and community forums, which is so key to disseminate the findings to the community members as well. And over half of the partnerships were awarded additional funding, and you can see those range from $15,000 up to $300,000 in terms of additional funding opportunities. So in terms of the social or the interactive part, of course, it's so important to have a way to connect with people in an ongoing way through an interactive website. And with funds secured in 2010 from NIMHD, the URC was able to hire a full-time communication specialist who expanded the communication system by overseeing the redesign and updating the URC website to make it more interactive, provide more linkages to resources related to collaborative research and CBPR, and include access to social networking, which of course we know is so key. This is a picture of the homepage, and interactive features on the website include regular news and updates featured on the front and center on the homepage, as well as links to social media such as Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. You have to have those elements in this day and age. A tab to connect to the CARD network, as well as links to various other forms of media, videos, photos, and our CBPR CD-ROM, and all of many other types of resources are offered through this interactive web page. Also, there's an e-newsletter and a social media presence that are very robust as well. The e-newsletter statistics, let me just give you a few of those in the interest of time. Since 2011, 17 quarterly e-newsletters have been published, and they're all archived on the website. The distribution list is to about 200 people, the CAR network, of course, but funders and also people involved in media. On average, 46% of people who receive the newsletter open it, compared to the nonprofit industry rate opening rate of about 23%. And also, the average click rate. You know, these are all new ways of measuring and monitoring, but you've got to keep up with the program here. Average click rate, and that's the rate of all the links involved. That becomes your denominator, and how many people click on the various links. So there's a 31% click rate, and the average nonprofit industry rate is about 11.3%. So we know that what's shared is relevant. It's of interest to people. They're not just opening it and closing it, but they're actually clicking around on the various links.
So let me just, we have 1 minute. We have two slides. We're going to be really fast. So just a few lessons learned. First of all is the critical importance of infrastructure to sustain and expand community academic partnerships. As everybody in this room knows, you couldn't do this without staff, without, we think of it as the glue that keeps everything together, and that's absolutely been critical. Angela and company have spoken before, we all know how much time, energy, care, financial resources this work takes. So we talk about this as a lesson relearned, okay? There's also the fact that you really need multiple strategies to facilitate and support community and academic partners. In some instances, we have somebody that goes to the web, an academic researcher and a community partner, link up just through the web. Another, they come to us, we meet, we facilitate a meeting, we provide ongoing mentoring, provide a lot of backup support. But again, you need those different strategies. And we've created through this process a lot of new connections and resources for the Detroit partner organizations. They in turn have gained a lot by having these new innovative strategies. And then lastly, Kimberly Donnell, close us out.
In closing, opportunities for future direction. We can handle much of this even during the Q&A period, but the potential for CBPR partnerships to drive the agenda for addressing social determinants of health and population health. And we know both of these are, particularly population health, is such an emerging issue and actually very nicely dovetails with what health systems care about quite significantly. Relevant to CBPR approach, to the relevance of CBPR approach to the Affordable Care Act. So, of course, we're looking at handling readmission rates and addressing social determinants of health as well. So very much relevance there. And then similarities between the CBPR approach and the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Initiative that we have recently received at PCORI funding and Henry Ford as well. So we know that there's all kinds of linkages in terms of emerging work that's occurring as well. So it's just been a pleasure presenting to you, and I look forward to the Q&A period.